If there were a world record award to give for world's greatest delay of game, it would definitely go to 2020. But even though MLB had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Right now, Indeed is offering listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/SBMLB. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/SBMLB. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
It's been a minute because we had our fundraiser. We were going to use that as a podcast, but it just turned out to be like 4 hours of like drunken debauchery. And if y'all want to like sift through all of that audio to find some like podcast nuggets in there, just DM me and I'll send you the audio file and you can do it. But we didn't want
the entire 4 hour audio.
So, but in the meantime, this is episode 63 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig. I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Surovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hi, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
So yeah, we'll get to more on this later regarding the event, but I just want to thank everyone that joined us over the weekend for our Dollars for Dingers prize drawing and fundraiser, like culminating event, Zoom hangout, game watching party, whatever you want to call it. I had a really good time. It was fantastic. Love bantering, drinking, and watching bad Mets baseball with you all. It brings me great joy, so thank you. To everybody. And the prize winners have all been selected, notified, and prizes have been shipped. So that's very exciting. So Dollars for Dingers officially comes to a close. We promise to do it even bigger and better next year, hopefully, when we're allowed to gather once more. So thanks to everybody who participated. We really appreciate that. It also softened the blow of watching yet another fucking Mets game because the Mets. The Mets went out with a whimper, I guess we could say, since the last time we podcasted. So
that's being generous.
Yep.
Yeah.
Until the penultimate day of the season, they were technically alive.
And they would have made it if they had won.
I know, because other teams kept losing. The teams that they were chasing kept losing. And so the Mets remained alive until the very end, but they couldn't even pull off one win. They just got, like, freaking swept
like,
by the Nationals.
We're going to lose two.
Like, all the teams are bad. None of them deserves to be in the playoffs. Like, there was a tweet I found about the Brewers that said they haven't spent a day over 500 all season. They set records for offensive utility. Their final record was, like, 29, like, 31, and they're in the postseason.
This year postseason, Rob Manfred? This year postseason?
Yep.
It's really bad. Like, they're really bad teams.
And this is what he wants more of, too, apparently.
Like, the fact that, and it's, I feel like it underscored it even more to me when we were watching the Mets be so terrible at the end when all they had to do was be, like, okay, and they would have made the postseason. It kind of, like, underscored to me even more what a joke this, like, expanded playoffs is, because the Mets were so bad. We all saw it, and yet they came within inches of making the playoffs.
And the Phillies, too. Like, how were the Phillies in it?
The worst bullpen in the major leagues, and they almost made the playoffs.
Like, they were, like, historically bad. Like, record-setting levels of badness.
Like, they made those Mets bullpens look good.
Yeah!
Which is amazing.
I mean, 16 teams. That's ridiculous. That's over half the league. And they're all, oh, don't get me started. It's just bad. It's all bad. It's all bad.
Usually, like I was telling Amazing Avenue Slack about this earlier. Like, most years, like, I will, like, I don't usually, unless the Mets are in it, of course, I don't usually, like, watch the postseason in earnest. Like, I don't usually, like, pay rapt attention to it. But I do like to put it on as, like, background noise while I'm, like, cooking dinner or, like, doing other things or, like, getting some work done. I'll, like, put it on in the background. But this year, I'm not even doing that because, I mean, I do feel an emptiness in my life without baseball, and it sucks that it's over, but, like, the postseason doesn't even feel real to me this year, and also, no. like, I refuse to validate Rob Manfred's nonsense with my viewership. I just refuse to do it.
Yeah, like, I just have no interest. Like you said, it's weird. There's, like, weird teams in it, and what's also bothering me is how everybody's praising the Marlins. The Marlins are not a good story. Can we just put that out there now?
Yeah.
They almost got the entire league shut down. Don Mattingly does not deserve manager of the year for letting his team play with COVID and putting a lot of people at risk, putting players' health at risk. But sure, let's all praise the Marlins for
let's frame it as a comeback kid story. Like,
yeah.
It's bad that the entire team got COVID. It's bad.
It's bad. This is not a good thing. This is really, really bad.
Like,
and Mattingly should not be praised. He was the adult that should have stepped in and said, you know what? Hey, we have some guys sick. Maybe we shouldn't play today. Of course the players were going to want to play.
I mean, we shouldn't praise him, but, like, to me, this is not surprising from him.
No.
And it's
in the slightest.
I was also tweeting about this with Nick Francona, and he said it's not all on him because the fact that he could make the decision was also a bad look for baseball, which, yes. It's also goes higher up than Mattingly, too. But the whole thing was just bad.
Yeah.
It's just bad. Everything's bad.
And taking COVID out of it, they just got essentially 2 extra weeks of rest or maybe even like spring training. Who knows what they were doing while they had that downtime. So, I don't know. It's just bad. It's all bad.
Yes. Everything's bad.
Watching the postseason certain games just because it's baseball and I don't want to lose baseball just yet. But I'm not really paying attention that much, but I have it all in the background.
Like, I don't know about you guys. Like, it was, you know, SNY's been tweeting some, like, the 99 infield got together and they did a Zoom with Gelbs and, you know, seeing them and just seeing last year, like, I was tweeting about this one of our Poto listeners. Like, I loved that 99 team so much because there was a magic to them. Like, you knew they were coming back. Like, and the same with 2015, 2019. Mm-hmm. Like, that Mets magic was palpable. It's a real thing you can, like, feel with your entire being. And I did not feel that once this year. I cannot think of a single moment where you thought, okay, we're going to win this game. Like, how many times in Slack did they give up a run in the first inning? We said ball game.
Yeah.
Like, for me, the entire season just wasn't fun. I don't know.
I feel like the walk-off against the Yankees was the only fun thing that happened this year.
Yes.
Basically.
No,
that was our peak there.
I completely agree with you, Linda, but that's just because this whole season there was no pitching. The bullpen was unreliable, and the starters either were injured or opted out. So you can't have any sort of a substantive game with no pitching. And I, like, resigned myself to the fact that, hey, they might look into the playoffs, but they really don't deserve to be there because they have no pitching. So,
yeah, and it's hard to get on a roll that way, too.
Yeah.
And for me, it was frustrating to watch because, like, I know that having the designated hitter in the National League benefited the Mets a great deal this year because it gave Dominic Smith a chance and he deserved it. And he was one of the huge bright spots of this season. So I don't want to take that away from Dom or say that it was a bad thing. But I feel like the lack of pitching that the Mets had and the way that they relied almost entirely on comebacks from their offense the times that they did win, it didn't feel like National League Baseball. It felt like American League Baseball, and that's why I enjoyed it less, honestly. And I'm not, like, begrudging American League Baseball fans. Like, some people love slugfests, and that's just the, like, type of baseball they prefer, and that's totally fine. It's just a difference of opinion. But I prefer well-pitched pitchers' duels to slugfests, and I feel like the Mets lost a lot of, like, 10-7 games this year, and I don't find that terribly enjoyable to watch.
there, yeah, there was a high amount of offense. Like, weren't the Mets, like, they had the highest batting average or something in the National League or
something like that? They were one of the best offensive teams in the league.
It was very lopsided because they had like a high on base percentage or high on batting average. I'm not sure which. I gotta look it up, but like a very low scoring in comparison to how many people they got on base, which
yeah, because they didn't hit with runners on.
They have black holes in the lineup too.
Yeah.
And also, how many times did they give up 19 runs this season? In a 60-game season, you gave up 19 runs in a game like 3 times.
Yes,
which is a lot.
That is a lot. Like, one person can go like years without scoring 19 runs, and they gave it up 3 times.
Oof.
Or at least, and then 15 at least another couple times.
Again, no pitching.
No. Yeah. And it wasn't fun to watch. No.
Yeah, and I feel like that sort of, like, concept transitions well into the other thing that I kind of wanted to talk about is, like, a post-mortem to end the season. I wanted to talk about, like, the best and worst things about 2020, because there were a few good things, there were a lot of bad things, and talking about the lack of pitching, I feel like the most glaring bad thing about this season was Steven Matz. To be perfectly honest with you, Steven Matz.
Yeah.
Like, just watching him, and I'm not even, like, saying this to, like, dunk on him. It was demoralizing to watch him go from a, like, you know, like, a mid-rotation starter and part of that group of Mets that, you know, defined the, like, era of decent Mets teams that was, that 2015 was the peak of that, but, like, that surrounded its success on its starting pitching. Steven Matz was a part of that, and now he's a borderline non-tender candidate. It's depressing. He just doesn't, he's bad now. I think he might just be done. He's just done.
Yeah, I know. I think it was, I want to say it was Gelb's. It was earlier in the year, and he said, "I have no words." He was like, "I am honestly stunned," because he said Steven Matz looked so good over either the summer or the spring break or whatever they were calling it. I don't even know which break it was. And he said, "I really thought he was set up to have a big year." And he goes, "And I have no words. I don't know where it went wrong."
I have two thoughts on this. A, I think he, like many other pitchers, was deeply affected by the fact that they started so late, that the ramp up was not what it normally was. And my other speculation right now is that he's injured, and not saying anything, is injured and doesn't completely realize it. I don't know how, but or is injured and is not saying anything because of the Mets' philosophy of play through injury. And we have copious amounts of evidence of players playing through injuries before. So I think this is just an anomaly of a year. Maybe that's optimistic of me, but that's what I'm hoping. And I think the Mets should keep him. Oh my, that might be an unpopular opinion right now.
Yeah.
But I don't want to give up on Steven Matz just yet.
It's so hard because, like Allison said, he was, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but like our most recent era of like golden age of Mets pitching, like it didn't last very long, but it was there. So it is hard to let that go, but he set a record for most home runs given up in like whatever the time frame was. Like he set a record for in like MLB history of home runs given up. Like I don't know if that can just be written off as a fluke. That's really bad.
I mean, it's really bad, which makes me think there's an underlying something going on there, like an injury.
He makes yeah. post
just because
he
made that. What?
He made post-TOS Matt Harvey look good. Like,
I
honestly.
Know.
And, yeah, he might be injured. I think that that's definitely reasonable to think that. And he did go on the IL at one point this season. Who knows how much of a, like, phantom IL get-your-shit-together that was and how much of it was real. But And Steven Matz has been an often injured pitcher in his career, so it's always kind of a specter with him hanging over his head. And as a result, like Kellyanne said, it wouldn't surprise me if he, like, is unwilling to come forward about pain he's feeling because he wants to show the Mets that he can pitch still.
But, and especially because he's been knocked for it in the past, too, by the media.
Even if injury is the reason why he's struggling so mightily, it might be an unfixable problem. It might just be one too many injuries at this point is part of my feeling. And why, I don't know, like, it brings me no joy to say that I'm on team non-tender at this point, but I am, unfortunately. I think they have to
non-tender. I don't know how much of this, you know, is that a part of it, that he's scared of if he does feel pain, or, you know, he wasn't throwing his slider because he was afraid that was going to hurt him. Like, is
he's
he just
on the record
is it
saying
in his
that
head?
That's been an issue.
Yeah, summer. Like, is it in his head? And then he also completely turned into John Neese, where one thing goes wrong and he melts down. Like, his body language gets bad. He's screaming at himself. Like, I know we mentioned this one time. It's so funny. Him and Jake are so close because they're the complete opposites of each other. Like, Jake's so cool on the mound. Like, you know, one thing goes wrong, he's like, okay, I got this. How am I getting out of this? And Matz is just out there fuming.
Yeah. And it got to the point where he literally hung his head after every pitch. Like,
yeah,
not
the
even
shoulders
just the ones,
slumped. Yeah.
Not even just the ones he was giving up hard contact on. Like, even when he was, like, missing his spots, he would just, like, slump his shoulders over. It was so obvious that he just didn't know what was happening to him. Yeah. And it's really upsetting to see that. It actually reminds me of a lot of post TOS Matt Harvey, just the body language on the mound. Yeah. The way that you can tell that he's a man out there with no answers at all.
It's sad.
It's really upsetting. But you know, I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that he can come back from this. Who knows? But It was a big downside of this season, along with Porcello and Waka not doing their jobs at what they were signed for. Of course, we all saw that coming, but it doesn't make it any less annoying that they didn't
their
jobs.
Like you said, if he's a non-tender candidate, you have one pitcher. Well, one fan. You have a perennial Cy Young contender at the top
DeGrom
of your rotation.
DeGrom and Peterson.
And then you have Peterson, who, if he's your two, you're in serious issue. Like, I love Peterson. I think he's a good pitcher. He's fine.
Peterson's a four or a five.
Exactly. But he's not a two behind a Cy Young winner. It's not how this works.
He's too young. He's still inconsistent. I think he's good, but, oh, my God. We need all the starting pitching. And that's also
Marcus Stroman, please.
That's also still partly why I want to keep Matz, because I think there's a fixable injury. Again, this is me being optimistic. I don't know. I don't want to let him go yet. Maybe it's just residual nostalgia and fondness. We'll see.
Even if you say, let's say they sign, like, Stroman and then, like, Taijuan Walker and Jake Odorizzi. You still need depth behind them. Someone's getting hurt.
That's not inspired. That group of names is not inspired.
No, well, the free agents are bad.
Yeah, the free agent market's not great.
Outside of Stroman and he who must not be named, there's literally, like, just a plethora of dudes who are just like, eh, he's fine, I guess.
Yep, it really is.
It also makes the fact that Brody traded away the farm, the entire farm. I don't even know if there really wasn't any pitching in it notable pitching that I can think of off the top of my head. But
K's been okay, and Dunn really hasn't been that good.
Dunn's been bad.
Yeah.
There's no one in the farm coming.
No. Since you brought it up, like, I didn't. Like, I've been just fuming. Everybody's like, oh, sign JT Realmuto and I'll be fine. Like, for me, I don't see a path to contention next year. Because
it's hard
this was the culmination of just years of the Wilpons half-assing it and never, like, they tried to play both sides, like, not spending, but still going for it. And this is what you get. You get missing the playoffs. You get, like, a complete disaster of a roster. You have no depth. You have no depth behind the no depth you already had because of a pandemic that you couldn't develop anybody in. So what do you do?
Imagine if they had retained Zach Wheeler and we felt confident they could re-sign Stroman. Then we'd at least have four of our five rotation slots filled at this time. But instead, we have two.
Yeah. And then, like, then there's the Lugo problem, which...
Right.
Yeah, I think that got answered. Sorry, Allison.
I mean, I'm still of two minds about this. I'm glad I didn't. It would have been like hardcore old takes exposed because Lugo had for those of you who were blessed enough to not watch the final Mets games, Seth Lugo, who I have been vehemently like in favor of him being a starting pitcher, or at least this season when they had no other options. My point being, like, I'm not saying that he should have been a starter instead of like Zach Wheeler. That's not the stuff I'm saying. What I'm saying is they had no other options this year and he was better than Corey Oswalt. But he had another bad start at the end of the season, and I was gonna write a piece for Amazing Avenue that I like just didn't have time to write that was like Seth Lugo should be a starter in 2021. And I was gonna make the argument based on his like, you know, he relatively good performance this year. He had like before the last start that he had one other bad one. The rest of them were okay to good. And then he had another really bad start. And I was like, oh, good thing I didn't write that. But I think my now official like take on this is I absolutely don't think he should be like guaranteed a rotation slot. They should go out and sign other pitchers to push him to the bullpen again. But I think he should be allowed to like compete for the slot with like if Steven Matz is in competition with him for the slot and Steven Matz looks washed still, then Lugo deserves it over him. That's kind of my feeling about it, but I understand why people are upset about Lugo being removed from the bullpen. But you can also sign relievers and make that a non-problem.
Yeah, like that's an option.
And make it so that Lugo is not so indispensable out of the bullpen as to pull him out will shatter the entire house of cards.
Oh god, it's such a mess. It's such a mess.
The pitching is just, it's bad.
The pitching's bad.
And they have no starters, no bullpen. I don't, like, where do you begin?
It's so frustrating because I think we've said this during several times this year because obviously, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, they've had one of the best offenses in baseball this year. And much of that is that people were like, oh my God, Dominic Smith and Pete Alonso, whatever shall we do? Jeff McNeil, JD Davis, too many corner, whatever shall we do? And I was like, this is what actual position player depth looks like. We're just not used to it. It's like, oh, Ahmed Rosario sucks now. It's like, well, we have Andrés Giménez, so who cares? Like Rosario being awful has like barely registered this season because Giménez was so good.
Yeah, he was fine. He had to as a replacement, but I mean, I depth, yes, and but for me, that's also a position of strength. Which means perhaps you can move one for pitching since, like we said, this free agent class is a bunch of, he's a dude.
Garbaggio.
Yeah.
Garbaggio. No offense to the dudes in this free agent class, but.
Yeah. So do you pick one of Conforto, Nimmo, JD, Dom, McNeil, and Pete, and Nimmo?
Yeah.
Those are your options. Pick one.
Trade.
Because I would lean more of an outfielder. I would leave Dom and Pete alone.
Yeah.
And, so because you have Jackie.
I know he would get the biggest return, but you got to extend Conforto at this point.
You have to. Like, because then you have Jackie Bradley Jr. and you have George Springer who are free agents. And that to me is a better better free agent class than the starting pitchers that are available.
They have to get a real center fielder on the team.
They have to.
Yeah.
We mentioned it before, but Nimmo's bad now. It's center, and like I don't think Conforto could cut it either at this point. They've got to get a real one.
McNeil is not a center fielder.
No, they've been patching that hole for too long. I mean, you know, if you really want to try the Ahmed Rosario to center field experiment, now would be the time. If you're not going to trade him, or like, now that he's struggling and Andrés Giménez is good and breathing down his neck for the starting shortstop position, now's the time to try the Ahmed Rosario to center field experiment if you're going to try it.
I would also be fine with even bringing back Marisnik as like a platoon. He was fine.
Yeah.
When he wasn't injured.
Yeah,
they could do that. They could do platoon.
Like, as a depth, like if you sign Jackie Bradley Jr. and Jake Marisnik, all right, let's do this.
Yeah, sure.
I would think that would be a fine platoon in center field. And then, I don't know, I guess McNeil's your left fielder, Conforto's your right fielder, and it's a completely fine outfield.
Yeah, I could get on board with that. But yeah, they got to fix the pitching, and if they have to trade to do it, then they have to trade to do it. But the starting pitching was by far the biggest black hole, like, awfulness part of
outside of catching.
Yeah, catching was pretty bad. That was bad,
I just can't, like, take the stats of this season too seriously just because of the circumstances surrounding it. So there are going to be players that were going to be better than normal and have great years. And there were players that were great that are absolutely sucked this year. Christian Yelich is the big one that comes to mind immediately.
I'm not worried about Pete Alonso, you guys. I'm putting that on record. We talked about this recently in Amazing Avenue Slack, that Pete Alonso's WRC plus was up to 120 by the end of the year. He's fine.
Yeah, I was not worried about him. He's having a sophomore slump.
So bad. I mean, he was unwatchable bad.
He had the kind of the same thing going on as Michael Conforto. Michael Conforto had a great rookie season in 2015 and then cratered in 2016, I think. Went down to the minors, came back up, and now he's good. So I think Pete Alonso is doing the same sophomore slump, and silver lining, this is a shortened, wacky season. So this is the best time to have that kind of that kind of sophomore slump. Getting all my asses messed up.
I don't know if he was also affected by the lack of fans. Like, he's so excitable.
Pete's the guy that, loves playing baseball, and he gets all pumped.
Like a little golden retriever with the ball. Like, let's go.
Oh, my God, he feeds off of the fans, absolutely. So I think he definitely missed the energy and the passion of the fans in the stands this year. I mean, and they all did. I think that was apparent, but he in particular was affected a little more by it.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
And we talked about Matt, but Pete's body language got really bad too.
Yeah.
He would walk up to the plate and you would be like, he's already out.
Yeah.
He was slamming his bats off more often than normal. I know he has a tendency to do that anyway, but he was just slamming his bats around after all his at-bats.
He looked near tears multiple times in the dugout.
Yes.
So. I mean, again, I'm taking it as a sophomore slump, and that I'm glad it happened now in the wacky season when it was shortened and it wasn't prolonged over 162 games, because that would have been brutal to watch.
Oh, God.
I think if they're in person again, and Chili Davis is back in person. Because I think the hitters were also affected by the lack of hitting coach in person, because during games, they can go and ask him stuff that he observed in their at-bats and adjust, and they didn't have that this season.
JD mentioned Chili Davis too, but really, if the offense is that contingent on one person, they have bigger issues.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a million issues with pitching, with I think staff members, coaches, so it's we'll see what happens next year.
If there were a world record for world's greatest delay of game, it would definitely go to 2020. But here's the thing, even if your MLB team got to take a break, your business didn't. And hiring has to keep moving, even when the game stops. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because it connects you to the best candidates fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you payment flexibility and full control over your hiring, so you only pay for what you need. Plus, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Indeed also gives you powerful tools to make your search easier, like sponsored job posts, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. 73% of online job seekers visit Indeed each month. Maybe that's why over 3 million companies have trusted Indeed to help bring on the important hires that keep your business moving. Right now, Indeed is offering listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/SBMLB. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/SBMLB. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
SB Nation presents the SB Nation NFL Show. 5 weekday episodes to get you through the grind of the NFL season with your favorite SB Nation community leaders. You'll get reactions to what happened on Sunday, film breakdowns, fearless takes, local expert analysis, fantasy football advice, and so much more. There's a little something for everyone on the SB Nation NFL Show. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app to be sure you don't miss a single episode.
But yeah, I mean, I did want to mention some of the positives of this year. I mean, we already talked about some of them, but Jimenez and Peterson both breaking out was a huge one. They're going to be big factors moving forward, so that's great. And we already talked about Conforto having and Dom both having monster years. I think that that's huge for both of them and for different reasons, like Dominic Smith proving that he is a legit everyday player, like absolutely positively. And it seems like the DH is here to stay, so it seems like he probably will keep getting his opportunities alongside Pete Alonso. I know, we don't like that. We don't like it, but we do like Dominic Smith, so...
We do.
We do like Dominic Smith, but I'm going to miss the pitchers playing. I miss that. Like, there were so many times when I wanted Jacob deGrom to come to the plate just to save... Just to score for himself.
I wanted to see dumb reliever at-bats because you know the Mets would have had a lot of those this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I want to see, like, Chase and Shreve hit a double. It would have been great. But anyway.
While we're on the subject of Dom, Tom, I love you, Dom. I would give Dom a hug if I could. I would die for Dom if I could. But I never want to see him in left field ever again.
Oh, please, God, no. No, it's bad.
Well, I was going to say, how many players can we say that about? We could say that about Dom Smith. We can say that about Lucas Duda. I think we can say that about Daniel Murphy. So that we can say that about plenty of players.
But, like, I'm, like, legit concerned about his health. Like, face planting in the wall. I know. Like, it's all good, too.
It's like, oh, honey, don't play left field. You'll hurt yourself. Stop it.
Please don't hurt yourself. We love you.
I was still, like, a little concerned that he was not taken out of the game at that point.
Yeah that was really stupid. The Mets had to do one last Metsing.
Of course.
The potential concussion issue, which thankfully he didn't have, but, like, the other issue.
That's how Nimmo got hurt. And so he hurt his neck last year.
With the disc in his neck.
The slow-mo made me think that he had gotten, like, some whiplash. Which I was like,
hopefully, now he has the whole offseason to recover. So hopefully he'll be okay. Yes. Same with Andrés Giménez, too, because he did it. He also injured himself, like, in the same game. So...
And Conforto was already on the IL.
Yep. So that's great. But yeah, I mean, other big positives, obviously DeGrom continuing to be DeGrom is awesome. Sadly, we don't think he's going to three-peat, but he was still obviously dominant and awesome. And just
he should three-peat. He should three-peat.
He should.
But he's probably not going to. But that's okay because he's still great.
And also he finished, like, it's been bothering me because I know it's hard, like, we've talked about this in Slack, how it's hard to judge your career when you're still in it.
Yes.
And, like, right now, he's basically Johan Santana. Like, their peaks are similar. And we don't know, you know, we know what happened with Santana, but, you know, we don't know what's left for Jake. But I feel like the three would have guaranteed him the Hall of Fame. And not to say that he won't ever get three, but it just, I don't know. You don't know what the future holds. So I'm just
Would have strengthened his argument a lot to get three in a row.
How could a voter turn that down? Like, you can't argue against that. But I feel like since he finished the year first in strikeouts, that's at least something to, like, put in his column.
It is. And he did it. And he did it against a very, very potent offense in the NL and AL East. And I feel like that needs to be something that the writers kind of put in his favor.
And 100 strikeouts in 60 games in a 60-game season is pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah.
Like, how do you even do that?
And it's just, like, I think the thing that I'll remember most about this 2020 DeGrom season is, especially if he doesn't end up, like, three-peating, and so it may get lost among all his amazing seasons, is, like, the fact that he's a freak of nature and his average, like, fastball velocity just keeps going up and up and up as he gets older. Like, this year his average fastball velocity was 99 miles an hour. What the hell, man?
Everybody's impressed by that, but that worries me a little bit because I think that that's gonna make him blow his arm out, and I don't want that to happen. He has elite stuff not going 99, 100, 100, 102. He has elite stuff, and he had better stuff these past 2 years without that really super fast fastball. But it's impressive, like, for a speed thing, but, like, long term, it concerns me from an injury standpoint.
From how it was explained to me, though, like, it's different than Thor throwing 100. Thor
is an
easy
power. 99.
Yeah.
Like, his mechanics look good.
Yes, that's what it is. He's honed his mechanics so much, and to, like, he's refined them to, like, near perfection, where they said it's basically a whip. Like, he uses his arm like a whip. And he's just, like, flinging the ball at you, and it's so effortless. So,
and you see
him,
that in the graphs of his release point, too.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah. Like, I'll start to get concerned when those look different, when those don't look okay. Because, like, they still look the same as they've always looked, which is that he has pinpoint precision of his release point. To the point where, like, it's almost gross. Like, you look at his, like, you go on
all
Baseball Savant.
Gross.
It's pretty gross. You go on Baseball Savant, you look at the graphics of his release point, and it's literally, like, all the dots are on top of each other because he has the exact same release point every time. And it's amazing,
ridiculous.
because the thing that immediately comes to my mind when I think about that is right in the early stages of, like, TOS Matt Harvey, before we exactly knew what was wrong, if you looked at those graphs, it all of a sudden there was, like, a really massive change in his release point, and it was all over the place all of a sudden. And
it was messy.
It was like, there's something wrong. There's something horribly wrong with him. And Jacob DeGrom, on the other hand, has this incredibly tight graph. It's just interesting to look at. If you ever have time, like, screw around on Baseball Savant, because, and especially look at Jacob DeGrom's page, because it's just, like, a thing of beauty to behold, to look at these things and realize that he has literally perfected the art of pitching to the point where he's, like, a robot at this point. He's, like, not
He really human. Is. And he even said it himself, is he took the time during the shutdown and just refined his mechanics. Like, they were already, like, flawless, or, like nearly without flaw, and now they're flawless. Like you said, Allison, he's a machine.
And if he actually seriously learns a knuckleball,
oh my god,
I love be wild
so bad
knuckleball so badly.
Oh my god, please, Jake. Please.
I mean, in addition to probably extending his career by learning it, I just want to see him throw, like, a 69-mile-an-hour knuckleball followed by, like, a 99-mile-an-hour fastball or a 92-mile-an-hour slider. I mean, that would just be
bananas. I think
banana.
His ERA would be zero.
Yeah.
Just never going to give up a run again. So I guess we have one last Mets item before we move on from our longer than anticipated Mets segment.
Well, this is the postmortem.
It's the postmortem. Like, it had to be.
It's going to be an extra long episode, you guys.
Yeah, because we have a lot of stuff to cover. Baseball segment. Get ready, folks. Strap it on in. It's a long a pot of their own tonight. To be fair, we haven't potted in a week.
Sorry.
So the last Mets news item is that since we last podcasted, the last time we podcasted, the news of the Wilpon selling the team had just become official, and so we are in a new era of ownership, and the Wilpon ownership officially came to a close when the Mets barely missed the playoffs in extremely Wilpon fashion.
And finished in last place too, which was
I'm
going to be technical and say it's not official yet.
Well, they're out. Either way, they're out.
They're out.
So whether Cohen gets approved or not, they're done.
Yeah, they'll just sign to A-Rod instead then.
Well, because if Cohen doesn't get approved, A-Rod's coming in. So it's one or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cohen's official first act as owner before he's even officially become owner, but he said that if he is approved by the other owners, he will bring Sandy Alderson back to be sort of head of baseball operations. Right? Is that
the president.
Yeah,
he's basically replacing Jeff Wilpon,
which is awesome.
That's a great improvement if it happens. Yeah.
Baseball people in charge, Cohen even said that. He was like, baseball people will be in charge of baseball decisions. What? Wait, that's allowed? Since when?
It's the biggest, karma, punch of all time for the guy who had to listen to Jeff Wilpon for all those years and, keep the lid on for Jeff Wilpon and put up with so much of Jeff Wilpon's crap. To be I'm gonna take your job now. Now your job is my job.
And he's actually good at it.
And he's gonna be good at it, I think, yeah.
Well, I can't remember. There was some tweet listing all the talent he found that's currently on the team. It's 90% of the team.
Yep.
This is without a doubt Sandy's team right now. His fingerprints are already all over it.
And he did that constrained.
Yeah. And he did, there's talent here. And like you said, he did that without money. And so what's he going to be like
with
when he has support or is free to make his own decisions?
That's the whole thing. I think he's going to be a lot freer.
Yeah.
To and make his own moves. I'm excited if this ownership goes through. Ugh, that is one thing I am excited to see.
Yeah, I am happy Sandy's back. We've said it before, there's been no adult in the room. And Sandy, walks in and he can control the room. We've said it before, too, earlier with Brody. The PR disasters increased significantly after Sandy left. And, it's nice knowing, a professional is in charge.
Yes. And we'll take the reins. He said in 5 days in Flushing, he's it's not really a democracy in here.
Yeah.
I love that he came out with that. It's not. He's the decision maker.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I've been seeing a lot of takes, mostly from the state media and of other Wilpon propping up outlets, which you guys realize you don't have to do this anymore, right? Y'all realize that the Wilpons are done and you don't have to kiss their butts anymore? You know that, right? It's over. You don't have to do that
anymore.
Get
the memo. Yeah.
But a lot of them have had the take of Sandy Alderson, talking about his restraint and he'll be wise with the money. And it's
that's what he was told to do.
Exactly. Exactly. He was only this because of the Wilpons. Do you think that if he's handed an unlimited budget I'm not saying he'll get an unlimited budget, but you know what I mean? If the budget goes up considerably, you think he just won't spend that money or won't ever hand out a big contract? I think that that's nonsense.
Yeah, I think he'll have no problem writing a check to JT Realmuto. Just a guess.
Just a guess. Yeah.
I mean, I think he'll spend more, but I don't think he'll go bananas like the Dodgers or the Yankees. He will be, he won't be a miser or thrifty, but he won't just spend excessively either. Like on 13-year contracts, like some people have, and then have the nerve to. So just speaking, just on the off topic, going talking about Bryce Harper this season, like how did his season end up? Because I don't.
He was pretty good this year.
Yeah, he was good this year.
Okay. He was good this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But wrapping back around to Sandy, like you said, I think he's gonna be smart about it, and I think he would probably prefer like the way they're set up now. He has to go the free agent route, and that means spending money because their minors are barren, and which is what he inherited from Omar, too, and he had to build it back up. So he's kind of, like, back in the same position he was when he first took the job. Like,
yeah,
no minor leagues. And he did, look what he built. This is what he built. He got them to a World Series. I know there was some... is that Sandy's team or Omar's team? But you know, development goes into that too.
Those debates were exhausting.
Oh my God, I'm so over those debates.
But here's the other thing: he might be coming into the team now where the minor league landscape is going to be very different from when he came in last time. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, so he was kind of pissed when Ahmed and Dom first came up. He said they were unprepared for the majors. And he was totally right. Like, yes. Why is it that Yankees, like, a guy gets hurt, the next guy, you call him up, boom, he's like hitting home runs. You know, we always talk about
this. Call up is automatically good.
Good. Yeah, the Dodgers, the Cardinals, their devil magic. Like, their devil magic is good development. That's what it is. Like,
I mean, Keith kept mentioning it in many of the different broadcasts, was that these guys did not come up with good fundamentals.
Mm-mm.
That we saw top to bottom in the minor leagues, that these guys didn't have necessarily good base running habits or base reading habits. Just a number of things that are
like basic heads up little plays, like taking the extra base or, you know, like the little things that can win you the ball game that won't show up. I know, like, that's a cliche, but it is the little things. We saw that when they played the Rays. The Rays did everything right. And they, you know, they made the good plays in the field. They took the extra base. They were aggressive, but, like, that's stupidly so. And the Rays are in the playoffs right now. Like, those little things add up over the course of a season.
They do.
Absolutely.
So I feel better... because if Sandy's mentioned that in the past with Ahmed and Dom, I mean, look at how long it took Dom to finally feel comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, like, I get development is different for everybody. I get that. But this just seems like a system-wide failure on their part.
I agree. And I'm hoping that he brings in a supportive, smart staff from top to bottom, however the minors look next year.
Yeah.
If he gets the job.
Yes,
if I am not saying this is definite yet, it's not going to be definite until the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted.
And also, I don't know, did you read the Sandy book?
Yes. Well, I take that back. Well, no, I did read the Sandy book, but I read the edition that does not have the 2015 amendment in it.
Okay,
and I loved that book.
Yeah, it was so good. But the part that's like stuck out to me, it was 2014, and well, a couple things about that stuck out because first the author was sitting in spring training with Sandy. I think it was 2014. And the author kept saying, so Noah Syndergaard, Noah Syndergaard, Noah Syndergaard. And Sandy's like, no, watch Jacob DeGrom. Mm-hmm. And so it's like Sandy knew from the beginning. I was like, oh, And another part, so that kind of stuck out to me. And the other part that stuck out to me was, again, in 2014, Hefner was trying to come back from Tommy John, and he was rehabbing and then got hurt again. And so he was in the hospital, and then Jake had to go to the hospital too because his arm started hurting. So Sandy said he was in the neighborhood, so he decided to check in on his two pitchers. And so the author said he found two pitchers whose careers were going in opposite directions. Hefner got diagnosed and needed a second Tommy John, and Jake was on his way to winning the Rookie of the Year. And so now the three of them are all here again. Like, Sandy's back. Hefner's a pitching coach.
Is Hefner going to stay the pitching coach? I'm curious to see that.
I would keep him. This wasn't his fault, any of this.
No.
I think he's done fine.
Yeah, and it seemed like the pitchers didn't have an issue with, like, he seemed prepared. Like, what during the shutdown, he seemed to, you know, connect with them still. Like, he came up with pitching plans for them and, you know, stuff to do, like, virtually while they were shut down. So it seemed like, you know, he tried to make the best he could.
Make it work the best.
I know, as a rookie pitching coach, you're, like, faced with this. So I don't know. I don't know if you can judge him this year.
I mean, you again, I don't think you can judge it, but I'm just curious to if he would do better if he got more experience coaching in the minors first and then coming back up to the majors, because I don't think he had any coaching minor league, like any kind of coaching experience before this. I could be wrong. I'm not 100% sure. But to kind of be thrown into the major leagues immediately was not the wrong decision, but he's inexperienced. And I would have liked to have seen him with more coaching experience at the lower levels under his belt.
I guess, this season was trial by fire. So I think,
This is trial by fire. This is trial by fire for so many of them. And I think that was another issue, was that this was such an anomalous season with a lot of rookie coaches, from Hefner to Rojas, to whoever kind of the in-person hitting coach was, since Chili Davis wasn't there.
And then they lost Bam Bam for a little while.
Yeah.
So, like, even, like, I guess he was, like, the veteran voice on the bench, and even he was gone for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it was just a screwball of a season.
It was.
It was weird. We'll see what happens under the new regime, how they decide to handle coaching and stuff like that. And obviously who they pick to be the general manager will be interesting, because I don't think Brody will be back. I think that's almost a foregone conclusion at this point. We'll see. But in the meantime, got to cut this Mets segment off. It's running too long. Too much to talk about the Mets.
Bye, Wilpons.
Bye, Wilpons. Peace. Smell
you. Bye, guys.
Thanks for nothing.
I hope the door hits you on the way out.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
Bye. But this week we have other stuff to cover, other baseball-wide stuff. Before we get to the other stuff, I'm going to address this in like 2 minutes or less, because I don't want it to take up too much of our time, because he doesn't deserve it. But the people who were on our little fundraising call know, and people that have been following know, that I made a tweet thread about Trevor Bauer recently, and it got like a fair amount of attention, like way more than I thought, which in and of itself was kind of good, because like at least it means that people were like paying attention and like sharing it and stuff like that. Basically, it was like a compilation of like, because we were just talking about what a asshole he is in Slack, and what a bad person he is, and how people don't seem to care, and so many people don't know. And I feel like this is getting renewed attention now that he is, you know, a Cy Young contender. Like, so many people who don't know all these terrible things that he's done are like in his corner rooting for him because he's pitching so well this year. And so, like, I just wanted to tweet a thread out of all these horrible things he's done, just so people know, because, like, there are renewed calls for the Mets to sign him in the offseason because the Mets need pitching and yada yada, and lots of people want their favorite teams to sign him because he's going to be a free agent. So I was like, you know what? Like, I think a lot of you don't know that he sucks as a human. And so I tweeted all the stuff, and then the tweets got reported eventually. Like,
very
they got
public stuff, too. It wasn't like you made anything up.
Right. I didn't make anything up. This was all, like, screen caps of stuff he's tweeted publicly from his public Twitter account, or, like, art news articles that are, like, freely available. Google is free. It's very easy to find these things. Like, if you wanted to recapitulate the Twitter thread that I wrote, you could easily do it with, like, 10 minutes on Google.com. I promise you, it's all out there. None of this was secret. I don't have inside sources. I'm not, like, a fancy pants person that has inside sources. This was all publicly available information. So I tweeted about, like, you know, how he's harassed women, how he's said racist stuff and transphobic stuff and, like, really, really nasty things. And, the tweets got taken down, because they were reported. I strongly suspect it was him or his agent, although I don't have proof of that because I don't know who reported the tweets, but I got suspended from Twitter, like, very quickly after the tweets were reported, and usually, like, I know Twitter likes to tell you otherwise, but usually that only happens if someone really important reports your tweets, or if, like, hundreds of people do it at once. Usually they don't deal with things very quickly. They notoriously deal with things very slowly, unless someone important brings it to their attention. So I'm pretty convinced that the swiftness with which this occurred means it was either him or his agent that reported the tweets. I was suspended from Twitter, I made an appeal because I got suspended for abuse and harassment, and I was like, please tell me what was abusive or harassing about these tweets. It was just posting things that he himself has said. And so I appealed the suspension because I didn't feel like I did anything wrong, and went days and days without hearing anything. And, you know, if you just delete the offending tweets, you can get your account back. But I was trying to be principled and standing my ground on it. And so I didn't delete the tweets. I appealed. And I was given during the whole, like, suspension, I was given, I was reached out to by someone, and I was given a contact at Twitter, to reach out to. So I emailed that person, didn't hear anything for 5 days. Finally, today I emailed her again, like, hey, like, hope you got my email. And they emailed me back just being like, we had a, like, 2 or 3 email exchange, but more or less it was just like I explained the whole situation, and they were like, can't help you. And I was like, well, okay, Twitter's not gonna do jack shit about this. So I deleted the tweets. I caved. I deleted the tweets, and I'm back on Twitter now. So that's that story. And it's just like, what frustrates me about it isn't that, like, I got my Twitter taken away. Like, I don't actually care. I didn't even join Twitter until, like, 2018, so, like, I don't actually care about, like, Twitter. A social media account is not important. There are much more important things in life. What makes me upset is that this is what happens when you try to call notable people out for crappy behavior, is that you get deplatformed and they can continue living their lives. People will keep buying their jersey. People will keep insisting that their favorite team sign Trevor Bauer. People will keep getting excited about him winning the Cy Young when he's just this, like, incredibly shitty human being and no one seems to care.
And I think you bring up a great point, because I got into a Twitter argument with somebody. I don't know why, because I'm a moron. But, like, I was explaining to him, like, he got it. He was harassing, like, a teenager on Twitter. And he was like, well, it goes both ways. She could have blocked him. I was like, you don't understand the power that he has of followers. Is she supposed to block thousands of comments calling her fat, ugly, a whore, bitch? Like, that's what he does. It's not just him. It's his Bauer Patch Kids, which I love.
Oh my god, yes. Shout out to Corey for coming up with the term Bauer Patch Kids, because I'm going to keep using that for the rest of my life.
Yes, I am too. Like, the Bauer Patch Kids, it's just like, the balance of power is different.
Exactly.
And, like, that's what he uses. And he uses it to either bully, silence, harass, and doesn't care, and other people don't see a problem with that. And that's what grates on me the most, is how do you not see, like, a girl with a couple hundred followers and a grown-ass man with thousands of followers sticking his hordes of people on this girl who just made a comment, because we all do, and then he tweeted at her for 12 straight hours.
Yeah, a college student.
A college student.
He bullied a college student online because he's a bully. Yep. And it's like you said, Linda, it's about the platform that he holds, and he wields it irresponsibly. He has, yes. How many followers does he have? I don't even want to look it up, because
I don't want to look, because I don't want to see his face.
It's gross. But he has a lot of followers, and it's about the imbalance of power there. It's like these two people, even if there are two people arguing back and forth, there's not an equal responsibility there if one has power over the other one. It's like the same thing of when people used to say, like, you know, when, for example, when I was a grad student and people, and like a professor was like, you know, using his power inappropriately, and people would be like, well, just report that professor then. It's like, it's not that simple. He holds power over whether I graduate. So, like, how am I supposed to, like, we're not equally responsible here. He holds power over me. So he's the one who's being abusive to me, the student, who has no power. So in that instance, it's the star athlete who has the power. And yeah. He's the one who's wielding his power irresponsibly. Because she's arguing back, it's not her fault.
He has over 350,000 followers. I looked it up.
There you go.
Yeah,
and I think what frustrates me the most, like, isn't even just the people who are ignorant of this behavior, because there were a few people who, like, before the tweets got taken down, who were, like, in my replies, like, wow, I had no idea. Thanks for bringing this to my attention. And, like, that's fine. You know, they're, mm-hmm. like, ignorance, as long as you admit you were wrong and move on and, like, you didn't know these things, great. I'm glad I could educate people. That was really the point of the tweets, not to, like, you know, be like, oh, Trevor Bauer, come after me. It wasn't like that. I wasn't trying to pick fights with him. But I think what frustrates me the most...
because you never tagged him or anything.
I didn't. People probably snitch tagged him, but those people...
Or he just name searches.
He name searches. That's a known fact. But I think what frustrates me the most is that people just write this off as, like, edgy behavior instead of, like, outright problematic and abusive behavior. Like, because he has a YouTube channel and, like, says things about, like, and calls baseball out about things. Like, he doesn't, there are opinions that he has that are correct opinions, like, about the game. And he calls baseball out about stuff that they deserve to be called out on. But just because he does those things doesn't mean he's automatically good and we should ignore all these terrible things about him. People just think he's, like, cool and edgy because he, like, speaks his mind and, like, that, you know, brings, you know, there's certain tones about that that are reminiscent of our current president, that people say things about him too that are similar.
I put this up on Twitter too. Stroman speaks his mind.
Yep.
And so, but what's the difference between Bauer speaking his mind and Stroman speaking his mind?
I can think of one difference.
I can too.
I can think of one difference.
The thing about Bauer that, like, bothers me not the most, but there is a video I saw, the video where he threw the ball into the outfield after having a bad pitching performance, but there was a player behind him, and when he turned to throw the ball, that player absolutely, like, just without hesitation flinched and ducked.
Yes.
And so what is he like behind the scenes to his teammates
hate him.
That they have that immediate kind of reaction?
I think he's even said he has no friends. His teammates don't like him.
He tries to paint it like he's edgy. Like, oh, people don't like me because I don't care what other people think. It's like, oh, well, for someone who doesn't care what other people think, you sure name search on Twitter a lot, sir. If you really didn't care, you wouldn't go after me for my, like, in my, like, couple thousand followers compared to your 350,000.
We even saw it again. Like, somebody had the audacity to write an article about how Jake faced tougher competition this year, and he had a Twitter meltdown about that.
Yeah, he was in Wayne Randazzo's replies about that. Like, me! Yes! And it's like,
comments came up.
People who are insecure about themselves do behave this way.
I don't know if you've seen the movie, but it dawned on me the other day. Like, have you seen Happy Gilmore?
No, I actually haven't.
No, if any of the listeners have seen Happy Gilmore, he is 100% Shooter McGavin. Like, he can't stand when the spotlight isn't on him, when somebody who has the audacity to be better than him. And I guarantee you, if somebody else wins the Cy Young, he will show up, take it, and run away.
He's gonna have a freaking meltdown. If
he will grab the plaque and run. I'm telling you now, because that's what Shooter McGavin did.
Well, I was gonna say, if Jacob DeGrom on the outside chance that he wins will like bash his head in if he tries to take it.
He can't defend himself. He's like 100 pounds.
It's true. But yeah, I don't want to waste any more time on him because he's a lowlife. But
that was way longer than 2 minutes.
Yeah, that was way longer than two minutes.
He makes me angry. I can't help it.
So yeah, don't like. I don't know. Like Mets, lots of Mets fans listen to this podcast. Like, I mean, you know, like he pitched well this year, but that doesn't mean you should want him on your team. It's the same thing as like, yeah, like Jose Reyes may have been good at baseball once, but that doesn't mean that we were excited to have him back on our team because like character means something. I just would rather also have Marcus Stroman, who is outspoken and opinionated, but also fun and good.
And also, I'm just going to put it out there. Bauer's success might not be what you think it is.
Oh yeah, there's that whole thing too.
Oh yeah, the spin rate.
It was part of the thread that I tweeted, but which is now gone, RIP. But like, he basically bragged about, he complained a lot about the Astros cheating and like bragged about how he knew exactly how they were cheating and like doctoring the baseball and all that stuff. And then he was like, it makes your spin rate go up, watch. And then all of a sudden he has like massively increased spin rates this year. So,
yeah, The Defector had a nice little article about how in a month his spin rate like jumped astronomically.
A little bit of a statistical oddity, we'll just say.
Yeah. And then somebody in the comments, thank you Defector comments, said for reference, here's Jacob DeGrom's spin rate, and his increased, but his increased every year over like a longer period of time, like not in one month.
It was like developmental.
Yeah. And they said in his went with an increase in velocity, so that kind of went hand in hand and explained why he had the bigger increase, like the increase in spin rate. This again, there is no explanation outside of outside substances, which he himself proved because he does science.
Yeah. Oh, he likes to think he's like the science guy, which is the worst too. As an actual scientist, he's just a jock, everyone, who, like, uses big words and, like, straps electrodes to himself. He's not a scientist. Anyway. So the other big baseball happening, wider baseball happening that's been going on besides the playoffs, which we talked about a little bit, is that we had Jen Ramos on the show a couple weeks back to talk about Tom Brenneman and the slur that he said on a hot mic. And so the latest development with that is that he has stepped back from announcing Reds games. And with that, he issued another like sort of weird, like non-apology statement apology thing. And he said, I'll read part of it, not all of it, but I would like to thank the Reds fans and the LGBTQ community for the incredible support and grace they have shown my family and me. To this great city, my hometown, a sincere thank you. I truly regret what I said, and I'm so very sorry. No one loves this town more than me. And he goes on to say how long he's been in the profession, blah, 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 and he hopes to return someday, and given the opportunity, I'll be a better broadcaster in person. I'm grateful for the forgiveness so many have extended me, especially those in the LGBTQ community who I've met, spoken with, and listened to almost daily over the last 5 weeks. With their continued guidance, I hope to be a voice for positive change. And so then the Cincinnati Reds also issued another statement that they, like, respect his decision to step away from the booth and applaud his heartfelt efforts of reconciliation with the LGBTQ community. It's like, what efforts has he actually made? The Brenneman family has been an intrinsic part of Reds history for 50 years. We thank Tom for bringing the excitement of Reds baseball to millions of fans. We appreciate the warm welcome Tom has showed our fans at Red Fest and Reds Caravan, which is like, basically it's like praising him and being like, oh, he's made such an effort. And it's just like, it's all like really gross. Actually, this is kind of funny that, you know, the organization that Trevor Bauer is a part of is doing all this stuff. And like, Trevor Bauer silent on this matter, not to mention that fact, because it's several of his teammates, on the other hand, were like, we reject this and we stand in solidarity with the LGBTQ community. Did Bauer do that? Absolutely not.
No, actually, he deleted the tweet. I'm so pissed off that he deleted the tweet, because that night, I mean, he didn't know what was going on in the booth. I guarantee it. I accept that, because he did like a beer drinking, like celebration after he like struck somebody out like that night. So the next day, while the rest of his teammates are tweeting, "This was awful, we stand in solidarity," he tweeted a video of him drinking a beer in his locker the next day.
Yep, sounds about right. So, yeah.
Good job.
It's just like, so like, yeah, like, it's just, and, you know, I'm saying this because I have actually read queer writers and queer baseball folks like opinions on this, and I'm learning from them, and it's seeing it through their eyes and reading their words, I'm frustrated on their behalf, because it's these statements are garbage, and you can tell mm-hmm. that they're garbage. And as always, it's always about centering the, like, your own feelings. Like, it's always about centering Tom Brenneman's own feelings and not actually about the harm he caused. He's centering his own feelings, like, oh, I hope I can be a better person, I appreciate all the grace and support from the LGBTQ community, without actually like doing the work. He's centering himself, and this is all part of a bigger theme of people who are not members of marginalized communities centering themselves in these conversations and their own feelings, and almost using people in marginalized communities as like props, like opportunities for these problematic people to, quote, like, better themselves and like make themselves feel better. That's not what it is about. It is about the harm you caused.
And like, I don't even think he mentioned the LGBT community when
not when he first apologized. I used heavy air quotes.
Yeah. So
he,
like,
he didn't apologize. He released a statement that it was a typical PR statement to make himself look better without actually taking any responsibility for what he said.
Yep.
It's not an apology, and I wouldn't even say it's a non-apology apology. It's not an apology.
Yeah, and of course, like, even now, it's all about, like, I love this city, everything you fans have given me. Like,
go away. Just shut up and go away.
Just go away. Go away.
And didn't he say he's never used that word before?
Yeah, you're full of it. You're full of it.
Yeah, like, the way he said it, it was just so
casual. Like,
yeah.
It was the, like, mark of someone who has said it before.
Multiple times. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
So, I don't... it's a non-apology apology, and it's also a non-apology apology that's full of lies.
Yep. And of course you have who else but Knob Bightingale. I'm going to keep calling him that because it's a good spoonerism. But Knob Bightingale is out here writing redemption pieces. Cue the redemption piece every single time. Without fail, every single time one of these people reveals themselves to be exactly who they are, Knob Bightingale or someone else, some other shill in the baseball media, comes out with these redemption pieces about, like, what he's learned and the impact and, like, oh, he's stop
growing
it.
Growing as a person.
No one needs your profile on Tom Brenneman. Absolutely no one asked for that. Nobody asked for that. But the thing that makes the like, only redeeming part of all of it is that Tom Brenneman's a meme now. If you go to the Knob Bightingale tweet where he tweeted out his article and just read the replies to it, like, do yourself a favor. If you want to have a nice, hearty laugh, read the replies. It's glorious.
Don't have a drink nearby when you do it.
No.
Yes.
Make sure all liquids are away from you when you do it.
Yes, because you will spit them everywhere. It's just so good. Basically, every reply is his, like, weird apology interruption call that he was making, like, during the game. So it's the, I pride myself and think of myself as a man of faith. As there's a drive into deep left field by Castellanos, and that'll be a home run. And so that'll make it a 4-0 ball game. I don't know if I'll be putting on this headset again, whether that be for the Reds or my bosses at Fox, which is, like, what he said on the broadcast while he was, like, trying to, quote, apologize, but that was also still calling the game. And so, like, everybody's just replying to all tweets involving him with that quote, and it's hilarious. I even saw someone, like, reply to it with that exact quote, all in French, which is awesome, too.
Yes, that was awesome.
Amazing.
And I accidentally responded, too, and I'm still getting likes on it.
Yeah, Linda, yours was really good because, like, Because you wrote, like, your own interruption tweet, which is amazing. Linda wrote, is your only job to write puff pieces about assholes, and there's a drive to Deep Left by Castellanos, and that'll be a home run. It's so good.
I'm like, it's not stopping. And then JT responded to me, this joke's getting really played, it really needs to stop, and there's a deep drive.
So, if nothing else,
Twitter is good. Like, all of Twitter came together to meme Tom Brennan.
Yeah, if nothing else, out of this garbage dump of a situation, a new incredible meme is born.
And it's everywhere. Like, you see,
it's
like,
everywhere now.
Yeah, like, it's Dodger fans, it's Mets fans, it's Reds fans. It's like, all of baseball Twitter has come together in, like, one glorious meme.
Yep, it's great. But yeah, the one last thing that I'll say about this, just as someone who's been, like, reading, you know, reading folks' responses to things, and obviously the, like, back in August when the Tom Brenneman situation originally happened, it sort of, like, sparked a lot of conversation about inclusivity in baseball and, like, quote, how far we've come, which OutSports did, like, an article about, like, oh, it shows how far we've come, and a lot of people were like, do we really need to write this? But then, specifically, there was a piece in The Athletic. I will be fully transparent and say I didn't read it. So I don't want to, like, disparage it without reading it, the actual content of it. But I will say that the reaction to it was pretty negative. It had, like, the piece had a lot of interviews with a lot of queer people in baseball, but the two writers of the piece were not queer. And so a lot of queer writers like Brittany and Sydney and Jen and a whole lot of other folks talked about how articles like that are once again sort of around this theme of, like, you're not part of this marginalized community and you're using the marginalized community as an opportunity to better yourself, because both of these not queer writers said that the piece, like, quote, made them a better person to write. And it's like, yeah, I get where your heart is there, and I understand what you mean, but when a queer person sees that, all they're seeing is you're capitalizing on our pain and writing pieces about our pain and displaying it for clicks. And, like, you know, just let queer people tell their stories. Let queer baseball writers tell their stories. There are queer baseball writers. Let them write about it. Rather than using, you know, like, getting all these interviews from queer people and using them for clicks for yourself. I see a lot of those same themes when, like, you know, when Dominic Smith was very emotional about the Black Lives Matter protests and about George Floyd. And I feel like a lot of that, like, a lot of the, like, sharing of that around Twitter was sort of performative in the same way. Like, they were just capitalizing on his very public, raw emotion and pain for clicks. And it's like, we saw a lot of memeifying of the Breonna Taylor situation. She was basically made into, like, a meme and commodified for clicks. And, you know, nothing happened to her killers. So it's just really frustrating to watch this go down, and, like, people aren't held accountable for it. And it's just like, you know, let the people who are in the marginalized communities speak. Let them write these stories. You stay out of it, you read them, you listen. And that's what I've learned that my job is as a cis white straight person, is to read queer writers. So we will put these tweets in our tweets of this episode, the tweets that I'm referring to about this piece, and encourage you to read queer writers and their work about queer folks in baseball, because I think it's important for us to elevate their work instead of our own.
Yeah. And, like, I think we've talked about this with Jen. It's never going to change if they always feel like they don't have a platform, or they feel like they're silenced, or they feel like they can't speak. So we're never going to see a real change if we just keep ignoring that.
Yeah, exactly.
We need more queer co-hosts on our show, I think.
Yes, guests, co-hosts, But yeah, we definitely strive to do our best to get these voices on our show. And if you're interested in coming on or know somebody who's interested in coming on, please tweet at us. Please DM us. We would love to have you on the show for you to talk about this. But in the meantime, please absolutely read these people's work. They work very hard and they're very good at it. So I would like you to read their work. That does it for the very long episode this week. We're sorry, but we had a lot to talk about. It's important.
It'll be shorter next week.
Dang, Nabbit.
Yeah, no, sorry, not sorry, kind of.
Yeah.
Next week will probably be shorter because there's no more Mets really to talk about. But we always say that, and then like something incredible might happen. Something might go down. You never know. Who knows what will happen?
It's like Jeff Wilpon like locks himself in his office and refuses to leave.
Oh my god! Please don't even joke about not peaceful transitions of power right now.
Oh, sorry. Oh god! Will you shut up, man?
Sorry, that's my first. I'm referencing the debate right now. I'm seeing something going down on Twitter. Apparently, Joe Biden said to Donald Trump, "Will you shut up, man? I want to watch this clip now."
Oh no, I can't. I know that I've been missing all of it, and Twitter's been exploding. And I know I saw because like all of us have like on Slack because Amazing Avenue Slack is extremely active. We don't have all notifications on, but we do have when someone like tags us or mentions our names, like we have those notifications on. And so all I know is that something flashed across my screen while we were talking about, and Michael said, "I'm going to have to explain all of this to Allison when she's done podcasting." And I know he's watching the debate. So I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Also Stroman is waiting, and Stroman needs to be a Met. That's all I'm gonna say.
I love Marcus Stroman more than life. Please be a Met forever.
I was gonna say we're recording. I was gonna say we can talk about David Wright's new book next week, except it's coming out on the 13th, so we're recording on the 13th, presumably. So that can probably hold until the release day.
Yes,
but I haven't gotten a copy yet.
I need to get a copy too. But pre-ordered
it yet? I pre-ordered it a month ago.
Oh, I didn't pre-order it because
I didn't pre-order.
We will eventually absolutely have another book pod to talk about David Wright's book. That is like way penciled in. That's penned in the schedule.
Yeah, that's in ink.
We will have that. And you guys should absolutely check out, if you haven't already, check out The Amazing Avenue in Conversation. Chris and Brian did a fabulous interview with David Wright about his book. Highly recommended listening content.
I know, I'm so jealous.
But anyway, we will end the show this week, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Kellyanne Healy, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Can I cheat and have two?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
My non-baseball-related one is that I got my first grant last week.
Yay!
I'm excited about that, especially at a time when libraries are going to be facing huge budget cuts. I'm very excited that I got a fairly nice-sized grant for programming.
Yes.
So I am very excited about that. I wrote the grant in a day, which was like another thing that I'd never done, and got it. So that's my first walk-off win. I'm very excited about that, to do STEM programming at my library. STEM, for you guys that are not in the education sector, is science, technology, engineering, and math. We have lots of fun acronyms in education. Anyway, my second walk-off win is the Apato fundraiser we had over the weekend. It was just so much fun. It was a very casual hangout. Hung out with a lot of Amazing Avenue users, made some new friends that I hope come and post on Amazing Avenue. It was just a joy. Just chill. I wish we could have done it in person, but...
I know.
What?
I mentioned it to Vaz.
Yeah.
It was very Gary, Keith, and Ron vibes when we pulled out the baseball cards.
Yeah. Oh my god, yes.
We're totally Gary, Keith, and
Channeling
Ron
Channeling Gary,
right
Keith,
now.
And Ron energy is like all I can hope for in this world, to be honest.
I know.
Right? Thank you for those baseball cards. Me, I thank myself for my baseball cards.
Wish we could have done it in person because I had so much fun. Not that this wasn't fun, but just to see, you know, all the support that people give the podcast to was
was very rewarding.
Yes. Hopefully we can go to McKellar again next year.
That was so fun.
That was fun.
Next year we'll do McKellar again.
And we got to meet people.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to throw coasters at people, and I threw Rich into Kate at that fundraiser last year. I'm sorry, Kate.
But yeah, we had a blast with you guys. We love doing this stuff. Maybe in the off season we'll do another like little something for you guys. We'll have another Zoom night or something, because yeah, that was really fun.
We should have Zoom hangouts just more frequently with Mets fans.
Agreed. Yeah.
Because I was in a mood because Jake sucked and blew his Cy Young chances, and the Mets were eliminated from the playoffs, and it was a stupid but doubleheader. But it was a bad baseball day,
but it was a great Mets fan friend day.
Yeah, yes. Like my mood was considerably lifted when I joined the Zoom call.
Yes, I had a great time. Linda, you have a related walk-off win.
So I do.
You should
I
go
do.
Next.
I'm excited. Afterwards, we had to reach out to the winners, and Allison reached out, and we got a lovely, lovely email from one of our listeners who won. And how he listens to us with his daughters, and his daughter is named Shay. And I don't know if you're listening now, but oh, you don't know how that just touched all of us, and how it just made our day. And like I legit cried.
Yeah, shout out to Winston. Your email made my entire week. And as it you guys did. Know, I was having a pretty crappy week because of, like, all the Twitter stuff. And, like, I was just feeling really down about humanity because of, like, you know, I was like, damn, like, people suck. And, like, this is what happens when you try to, like, be a good person in this world. But then I got that email and I felt so much better.
And the picture of the family. What a beautiful family, too. Oh, my God. It just warmed my heart.
Yeah, he attached a photo of his family all in their matching Mets jerseys and talked about how this podcast is so important to him and how he listens to it with his daughters. And it's just it made our entire week, Winston. Thank you so much. That was the nicest email I've ever gotten. I think Linda was the one who said that we need to frame it. I kind of do want to frame it.
I do kind of want to frame it, too. Like, for sure. I wish we had, a headquarters we could frame it.
Future like, Apato headquarters, it will be framed.
Yes, if we ever have an Apato headquarters, that email will be framed when you walk into Apato headquarters. But, said also if Shay and his daughters are listening, like, kick ass, girls. Like, when you grow up, do whatever you want. You know, just go and kick some ass. And, oh, wait, maybe I should reframe that.
Kick some butt.
Kick some butt. You girl, girl
kick some
power.
Tush.
Yeah,
kick some tushy. You will rock at whatever you do. And you should love the Mets with your whole heart, even if they break it.
Yes. And because there are rewards at the end of it. And even if we complain. It's fun. And we're a lovely bunch of, you know, Mets fans are a fun bunch for the most part. And
we're a lovely bunch of weirdos.
You guys
We are. So, go get girl power. Go kick butt and take over the world.
Yeah, please do.
The two daughters.
And I have faith in the next generation if they have parents like him. So, it's awesome.
And with a name like Shay, I mean, you can't go wrong.
Exactly. So my walk-off win is, I mentioned that I was feeling like kind of down on humanity because of the whole like being suspended from Twitter thing and like, oh, this is what happens when you try to call someone out. But in reality, like the support I got from people after I got suspended was just like people reached out to me individually. Like people asked other people what my email address is or my phone number so that they could text me and reach out to me and see how I was doing, and it just meant so much. And just like hearing people being frustrated on my behalf and being like, this is BS, free Allison, was just like, honestly, it was really, really gratifying to see like that there really are people out there who like care about this stuff, and like how I've formed my own little baseball corner of the internet that is so wonderful. And just to everyone who like DM'd me, even the people who DM'd me, oh, I was suspended, and so I wasn't able to reply to you. I'm very sorry. I hope I've replied to everyone now. But to everyone who DM'd, texted, emailed, I appreciate you so much. Thank you. Like, you're the reason why I caved and deleted the tweets so I could come back on Twitter, because without people like you, I just would have, like, stayed off the Bird app forever, because it's a cursed app. And so, but, like, people like you guys, people like our listeners, people in the baseball community who support us, like, it means a lot. It really means a lot. I have, like, a tiny platform, and, like, you know, it's like, I'm not that big of a deal on Twitter, but it means a lot that there are people who have become really good friends that I've made just because of baseball Twitter. So, like, thank you all so much for the support. It means a lot to me, and it made it a lot easier to deal with, Trevor Bauer and his minions, so thank you.
His Bauer Patch Kids.
I'm not calling them that just because I like Sour Patch Kids. And I do too.
I think it's delicious, it's too clever. But it's just so perfect because they are so sour.
Yeah. but anyway.
It's also giving them more attention that they don't need, but it's true. That's me.
But if it also bothers them, it'll be nice.
I hope so. So yeah. That does it for the show this week. But you should go to AmazingAvenue.com. We are doing our own sort of written postmortems of the season. We're doing, like, takeaways from each of the major, like, positions. Like, I think Chris McShane published either the outfield or the infield. I think it was the infield.
It was infield.
Yeah, infield. Yeah. And Lucas wrote up the outfield, which should be coming shortly. But, like, yeah, we're taking each chunk of positions and we're doing, like, a post-mortem of each and what the takeaways are, if you can take away anything from this crazy season. So we have that content for you. All of your various, like, analysis off-season type content is coming. I think I'm going to do sort of a retrospective. We're going to do some retrospective pieces about 2015. Since we are 5 years out from it now, and things like that. So that's all coming for you guys. You can follow the site on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow Linda and I on Twitter. Linda, where are you on Twitter?
At Linda Servich.
And I am at Petite PhD, no longer suspended, still there. You can follow me on Twitter, follow Linda on Twitter, and follow the show on Twitter. You should subscribe to the podcast and rate and review it. It really helps people find the show. You should subscribe to the whole suite of podcasts. Listen to the Amazing Avenue in Conversation with David Wright. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying.